This is Vatican Radio, and I'm Susie Hodges. 4 years ago, on the 13th of March 2013, Pope Francis, the former Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio from Argentina, stepped out onto the balcony of the Vatican Basilica following his election to the papacy. In an interview with me marking this anniversary, David Gibson, a US-based Catholic reporter and author, looks back over the past 4 years of Francis's papacy and said he believed the Pope's promotion of synodality was the most significant change introduced by him. Listen to this special report that begins by taking us back to the evening of his election in 2013. He's one of the most popular and arguably the best-known person on the planet. And 4 years ago, his election on a rainy March evening stunned the world.
Habemus Papam. Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Georgium Marium, Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae Cardinalem Bergoglio. Qui sibi nomen imposuit Franciscum.
Not only was Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio the first pope from Latin America, he was also the first Jesuit pope and the first ever to take the name of Francis. Since his election on March the 13th, 2013, Pope Francis has chalked up many firsts and set his own inimitable stamp on the papacy.
Fratelli e sorelle, buonasera.
So just what has changed during the past 4 years since the new Pope spoke those first words from the balcony overlooking St. Peter's Square following his election? And where is the Church going under his leadership? To find out more, I spoke to a long-time Vatican watcher, David Gibson, a Catholic author and reporter for Religion News Service in the U.S.
Well, I think as much as anything, you have to start with the very style of his papacy, and that's what he began his papacy with his coming out onto that balcony. We were there in St. Peter's Square, and that simple buona sera and speaking to the crowd in such a heartfelt way. Everyone was so struck by it and asking for the blessing at the end there. It was just so striking then, but that wasn't it. That actually was, as much as anything, the program of his papacy in terms of how he wanted to change the papacy. As he said numerous times in interviews, we have to be normal, speaking about himself as pope, as a priest, and a bishop. This isn't some grandiose sort of office. He really is a humble servant, and he wants to project that in what he does. And that starts at the papacy, but that's also his message for the Church. You have to walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
Okay, as you said, a striking change in style. But if you had to look at some of the things he's actually done over the past 4 years, what do you see as the most significant?
I think the most significant change and actual reform has to be the principle of synodality, that is, of collaboration, of consultation at all levels. But these meetings, these synods, which just seem like an odd word to most people outside the Church, these consultative regular meetings of bishops and priests and lay people and experts, that he's trying to reset an entire way of being the Church, really pick something up from Vatican II, as he sees it, from the Second Vatican Council, that has sort of been lost over the years and over the decades. Those synods, those meetings in the Vatican to discuss various issues every couple of years, had become pro forma, almost rubber stamp kind of events. And there was a great frustration, I think, among bishops and clergy around the world that they wanted to have real input, that the people of God wanted to have real input. And by him really saying this is the style of Church that we need, I think he's fundamentally reorienting the management of the church. And that is, more than anything, his signal reform, but also the reform that I think will outlast Francis.
It's not always been plain sailing for him, though, over the past 4 years. What do you see as the main challenges he faces as he heads into his fifth year now at the helm of the Catholic Church?
Yes, there is a lot of opposition, and he welcomes that. And some of it is heartfelt, and some of it may be correct on certain things. He says, you know, he admits he'll make mistakes. Some of it is, I think, just people making mischief, people with ideological axes to grind. You know, it's really a question, I think, of how big this so-called opposition is. I think it's much smaller than we would think from the media reports. People speak of a civil war in the church that Francis has launched. Well, that's ridiculous. A civil war presumes two semi-equal sides. This is a relatively small faction, I think, in the opposition, but it has a certain platform, and it has a certain influence. But I think it's important to distinguish the types of opposition that Francis faces. Some of it is about his doctrinal moves or his perceived doctrinal moves. I don't see, a huge doctrinal revolution at all. I think he's really emphasizing the pastoral elements, the pastoral application of doctrine and mercy, you know, his signature theme, more than anything. But some do disagree with this. They say it's undermining doctrine. I think that's a small but vocal cohort. There are others there in Rome, in the Vatican, in the Curia, who are simply upset with the changes that he's making to the Roman Curia, to the Vatican bureaucracy. That's a different kind of opposition. That's just upset with some management decisions, which can have real impact on the lives of people. That isn't, you know, an ideological opposition. That's just simply a disagreement with understandably very upsetting changes in the way the Vatican has operated. I think there's a third camp of opposition, which is broader, but I think less influential, and that's simply political opposition. Conservatives, political conservatives, are really opposed to Francis's stress on welcoming migrants, on the evils of income inequality, on caring for the poor, that kind of thing. And so they are often very critical. But I think that political opposition actually has less impact within the Catholic Church itself.
Turning to the U.S., is his popularity still very high among most Catholics there? And what do people most like about him?
Well, yes, it really is very high. It's gotten even higher in the past year or past few months, which is interesting when we're talking about the opposition to Francis, which has grown so vocal, yet even as his popularity has soared into the almost 90%. So, you know, that really gives you a good indicator of the overall picture of his papacy. But I think the reason that he is so popular among Catholics and among the wider public, too, which is important to note. But I think the other reason he's so popular is simply because he seems to be someone who is living out the gospel. He's not just preaching at people. He's not just saying, this is the doctrine, you have to follow it. No, he's saying, you know, this is what the gospels say. The doctrine flows out of that. But this is what the gospels say. This is what the gospels call on us to do. The other thing I think that's really important to note about Francis overall, and also goes to explain his popularity, is that the church is so often seen as critiquing the world and critiquing those of us in the Catholic Church who fall short, as we all do all the time. Francis's first and chief target is the church itself. He always wants to stress that the church cannot say anything to the outside world until we as Christians, as Catholics, until the church itself models what Jesus says. You know, everyone sees him as a very wonderful, grandfatherly person who's so beloved and so kind, but he's very tough when he talks about what priests and bishops and cardinals and those who work in the Vatican need to do and how they need to act and to get rid of their privileges. So people see him criticizing and calling to the church to reform first, rather than pointing the finger at everyone else. And I think that really resonates with the public.
You're a long-time Vatican watcher. What are a couple of the things that Pope Francis has done that has most surprised you?
I think it's simply his way of talking. He'll give interviews all the time, and he'll, you know, just speak off the cuff, and he'll speak in a very pastoral way and in a very simple way. I think he's really, it's part of his strategy, as it were, of demystifying the papacy and really bringing it, reducing a lot of the kind of mystique that surrounds it, and making the papacy, the Pope, a genuinely real pastor. I think it's so funny to me. Everyone is so shocked by this Pope. He seems so different. And yet those of us who've been in the church for a while, and certainly those of us who know Jesuit priests, also seeing him as the kind of pastor in a parish that so many of us have known. There's something at once so unremarkable about him, and yet at the same time, the fact that he's Pope, it makes him so remarkable. So I think simply the way he approaches his people, the way he approaches people, the way he approaches his job and his ministry, I think, you know, is endlessly fascinating and striking to me. He just wants to go out and act like, you know, a normal parish priest out there, even as he is the Pope.
Okay, finally, where do you think the church is going under his leadership? What are his future priorities?
Well, I think it's hard to tell, as he himself says. I mean, he's a man also, again, this isn't just about a guy who's running the church. This is a man of deep prayer, a great piety. You know, he believes in the Holy Spirit and that the Holy Spirit is leading him and the church. And so it's hard for him to see what he's going to be doing the next day. I mean, all those of us who cover the Vatican, as you know, I mean, you get up in the morning and you think, what has he done now? What has he said now? So goodness knows what he's really going to do. But I think, you know, one of the great themes that he stresses and that those close to him always stress is the issue of discernment. In many ways, this papacy has been one long Ignatian retreat by a Jesuit spiritual master for the entire church. And he's really calling on people to discern, on Catholics to discern where they are, for the church to discern where she is in history, and then to act on that. So I think it's really important to look at things in terms of what he's really calling on the church to do. And I think what we'll see going forward and his legacy will be is to recover those great practices of discernment, of one's conscience, really examining one's conscience. These are things that are at the root of all these great debates over who can receive communion, et cetera. It's not so much about doctrine. I think it's about the worthiness to receive communion. How well are we following the gospel? Are we taking care of our brother and sister who is in need? It's walking the walk, not just talking the talk, and thinking about how best that can be done. So I think he wants to continue to have the church to discern where she is at this moment in history and then act on that. What that will lead to, who knows? There could be some policy changes, but the changes are really much deeper and broader and more enduring than that.
I was speaking there to David Gibson, a Vatican watcher, an award-winning religion journalist and author.